You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Curiosity Invited. I'm David Bryan. And today, what a great pleasure I have. I met him just for the first time yesterday, and I feel like I'm talking to an old friend, Jamal Lewis. Jamal Lewis, that other fella, the good-looking guy on the screen.
That's Jamal. You. That's yeah. You.
Yeah, well, if you think that your camera must be really...
No, I just cleaned it. I just cleaned it. I'll give you your flowers.
But Jamal Lewis, how do I describe Jamal? Is Jamal Lewis is an actor, a model. Now, he's got a clothing line, which we will talk about. And he is a former Stay Blessed. Yes, indeed. And those shoes behind him, the logo on top is the Stay Blessed logo, but all those shoes are not Stay Blessed shoes.
Unfortunately, not yet. We'll get there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And a former college football player, star, D1 at Arizona State.
Yes,
Arizona
sir.
State. And then you played a couple of years in the NFL.
I had a very short stint in the league, which was a surreal moment. But at the time, I wasn't living right. And God sat me down, and the opportunity got taken away from me. And it was a very hard pill to swallow for the longest time. That's funny. That wasn't supposed to be a joke, but literally. And we can kind of get into that whole story.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about that.
Yeah,
with the Redskins,
it was the coolest experience of my life. You know, walking into that locker room, especially the Browns, and just seeing, you know, your last name on the jersey, and you got your locker room, and it was the first time I really shed a tear in my life ever.
Well, first of all, let me just say thanks for doing this. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
I feel like I got the making. We've got the beginning of a friendship.
Amen. All day.
So, yeah.
Yes.
And the other thing I came across, and maybe some of the viewers, you know, say Jamal Lewis. There's another Jamal Lewis spelled differently.
Yep.
Who also was a football player, also played in the NFL. And it was like, there's a lot of confusion online.
Yeah.
We're like, who is this guy?
The funny thing was, so when I went to Cleveland, I was with him. So he was the running back and I was the tight end. I was the backup tight end behind Kellen Winslow. And so when I came into camp, the media had a field day over it, because when I came into camp, I kind of came in with a chip on my shoulder because I didn't get drafted like I was supposed to due to personal decisions I made off the field. Then when I finally got into a camp, I just came in like, okay, I need to show everybody, you know, what's up. And so I was making quite a buzz around the camp, and Romeo and the coaches, they were just like, who is this kid and where did he come from, kind of thing. And Jamal was actually out there with me. So every time something would come out in camp, it was just kind of like, oh, we have the two Jamal Lewises. And it was a big deal. But now, I don't want to say it haunts me, but it does come up a lot. Like, there's a lot of confusion because he was very successful in the league.
Right.
But then, you know, we got into some problems off the field too. So sometimes when you Google my name, that comes up and I'm like, no, I didn't do that at all. Like, what are you talking about? Relax. No, I would still be in jail. Stop.
Again, we just met each other yesterday, actually, for the first time. And I was so glad. I'm so glad we're going to have this conversation, because I had such a great time. Just, you know, like instant great time. So you grew up in a military family. I want to do early background here. So you grew up in a military family, moved around, et cetera, et cetera. What was that like, moving from place to place? And what kind of a military family was it? Was your dad like the drill sergeant who kept you all in check? Or,
well, I'll start with my dad. My dad, and this is the first time that I'm going to talk about this too in public. So my, my
just to be clear, you don't have to. We can take it. Tell well, me to take it out. But,
I want to. I want to be transparent about this because we're living in such a day and age. Even my position with what I'm doing is my fiance has two kids who obviously they're not my biological kids, right? So growing up, my biological father, he wasn't in my life. So my stepdad was my father and he is my dad. He's my pops. He's my everything. He's that as far as I'm concerned because of the time, effort, and love that he poured into me. It's unmatched. And, you know, he came into my life at such a young age that that's all I really knew, right?
Yeah.
And this the stories is really cool because our minds tend to cancel things out that we don't want to remember and just kind of hold on to the good. And my biological father turns out, and I didn't find this out till way down the road until I actually started playing football because I had a drawing to football. And my mom one day came and sat me down and she was like, we need to talk. This is why you're so good at football. And she pulled up this picture of my biological father who played for the Rams and the Chargers. And I kind of saw it and was like, whoa. Wow. Like, because it was my face on another, a grown man's body. And I was like, it was undeniable. I'm like, well, that's clearly where I came from.
Yeah.
And, you know, nothing ever changed. I never went looking for him to try and, you know, make amends or anything. Cause I was just so happy with the man that my dad raised me to be and just how to respect others and just life in general. And I think that does come from his military upbringing. He was in the Air Force. But he's not how you would think, like very stern and strict. It was just he's a man of integrity. And when he speaks, you listen because he's so well respected. And I can even remember, like, we would get spanked. It was a thing. Like, you did wrong, you get spanked. Nowadays, it's like, it's abuse. Like, you know what it's like?
I know. It's one of my buttons. You don't get me on my soapbox. Really? Turned out okay. We got hit. We got hit. I'm all right.
I tell people, I'm like, he might have killed me a couple times. I'm still okay. Like, you know what I mean? But I deserved it. And I tell the story to my fiance that I can remember a couple of times getting into trouble and I knew the spanking was coming and it was more, he never did it out of a malicious state. He was always very calm and he would go and sit me down and he would talk to me and say, Jamal, look, listen, you know, this is what you did wrong. You can't do this. This is unacceptable. As you're growing up, you're going to learn why, like you could end up here, here, or here if you do stuff like this. And then he would tell me how many spankings I was going to get. And he would tell me if I put my hand in the way, that does not count. So just take it like a man. And and
there's rules.
So by the time it was actually time to get the spanking, I'm literally like, just hurry up and spank me. Like I already, like I'm having an out of body experience from this talk. Like just go.
Yeah. So did you ever? Have you ever met your biological dad or no? You just never did.
He actually passed. He passed the year after I realized who he was.
Yeah.
And he was drinking and driving and he got into a car accident going back to a high school reunion. And which is sad, you know, you don't wish death upon anybody, but
no.
I think for me, I just mentally blocked out because I did have memories of him from a very young age, but they were not good memories. And I couldn't understand growing up where these memories were coming from because they would be like flashes. And it wasn't until my mom actually told me like, hey, this is who your biological dad was, that it was just kind of like everything just,
yeah.
That's what those memories were. It made sense. But yeah, I mean, the military upbringing was really good because we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but I was a short, fat kid growing up. I was a short, overweight kid who played tuba in the band and got picked on. So we moved around from Minnesota to Iowa and ended up in New Mexico, and then ended up in Colorado. And I was always cool with it because it was like every school that I went to. And I think you said something that really it hit me too. Like I was just living life as a little kid, having fun. And it was like, I didn't realize that I was a short, fat kid, but it was just kind of like, so I was like a happy-go-lucky kid. But when I would go to school, you know, people would still poke at me and laugh at me and, you know, just kind of the typical mean kid pick on. But it didn't really affect me that much. And I didn't, well, I shouldn't say I didn't outwardly. Inwardly, I was just kind of like, okay, I want to be popular. That's why I decided that I wanted to play the saxophone and ended up playing the tuba. So that whole situation backfired. But, you know, I liked being brought up in the military environment because it felt very safe as opposed to today with helping raise these kids.
Okay, so yeah, I know from yesterday, I'll just breeze through it, but you know, somewhere between eighth grade and ninth grade, I think it was, you just had a growth spurt, and then suddenly this short fat kid became this kid that people wanted to play football. The coaches wanted you to play football.
Yeah.
And you did. Yeah. And did you committed to, was Arizona State, you know, really the place you wanted to be attractive?
No.
I
had no vision of going to college. I mean, in the first place, but yeah. So going my seventh grade year to my eighth grade year, they had just built a brand new middle school in my school district. And so they were giving the kids the opportunity. You can either stay at the middle school that you're at, or you can go to this new middle school. And that summer, I literally ate and slept. And my mom thought I was sick. She was like, "Are you okay?" Like, and I was just like, yeah. Just eating and I'm sleeping. And the outcome literally was like one morning I woke up and I stood up out of my bed and I felt like I was in somebody else's body. I was like gangly and I was tall and it's like somebody just grabbed me and stretched me out. And I was like, how do you work this thing? Like, what is that? So I just felt like with this new kind of felt identity, that I would try a different school. And so I went to Mountain Ridge Middle School, which the first day that I walked in, I had a FUBU shirt on. That kind of dates me, like FUBU. But I walked in and, you know, I'm 6'5" and just towering over everybody walking down the hall. And the football coach saw me, both of them, Coach Mazza. He ran straight up to me and he said, "Hey, man," he was like, "Do you play football?" And I was like, "No, like what?" You know, I'm still stuck in the mind frame of little tuba player. And he was like, "No," he was like, you'd be on the football field after school today. You're playing football." So that just kind of, that set everything off. And that year I played like offensive lineman because I was the biggest one on the team. They needed a big body.
We need a big guy.
Right. So that was kind of my introduction. And that's where the football situation.
And then it just took off.
Yeah.
Okay. So then college and a short stint, like we're talking about, do you want to tell anything about that story? It was a short stint and then you were doing, why'd they kick you out or why did you get dropped?
No, I would love to talk about it. So the reason the basic self-destruction, let's just call it that, because for the longest time I blamed everybody else but myself. I took no accountability for the choices and actions that I made. And when I went from Colorado to Arizona State, which, let me rewind. So I originally verbally committed to CU. I was going to go stay home and go to Colorado, the Buffaloes. And I went on my recruiting trip and then I came back home and literally the next day, Coach Barnett, who was the head coach at CU, was in the news and he was being, I don't know if he was being sued or they, but they brought to light that they called it the recruiting girl scandal.
Yeah.
So basically they have a group of girls that when recruits go up, they show them around and some do this, some do that, some do the other, whatever. And basically he got caught. And so my mom saw it, who, my mom's name is Mary Kay. She sells Mary Kay Cosmetics. I am very much a mama's boy. And she looked at me and she was like, "You are not going.
You're not going there."
Like, what? Like, what are you talking about? So I was very highly recruited. My dad took our shoe boxes of letters that we had from colleges and we just kind of dumped them out. And I mean, there was SC, Oregon, UCLA, pretty much everywhere in the Pac-10, Texas, Florida, you name it. And I was just kind of looking at him and I was like, you got to remember, I grew up like not into sports. Like it wasn't a thing for me. So I wasn't on one school. And so my dad was like, "Well, let's just go over everything and think it out." And ASU just got a new coaching staff, a completely new coaching staff. So my dad was like, "You know, basically if you go here, you have a chance to play right off the bat because there's no favorites. They're not going to say, 'Hey, this guy's been here for 5 years. You could just go in and do your thing.'" So that ultimately was why we made the decision to go to Arizona State, which back then was the number one party school ranked by Playboy. And that was kind of the beginning of my...
And that was true.
Yes, very much. It might have even been higher. You can't go higher than number one. Yeah. And then just being so... it is what it was. Being so sheltered in Colorado and then being exposed to that lifestyle. If you've ever been to Scottsdale, Arizona, it's like a mini Vegas. It really is. And the women all are beautiful out there. And if you play a sport, it's just like times a million. And I just never experienced that. And so for my first 2 years, I was just kind of quiet under the radar, getting to learn college and doing my thing. I had a solid girlfriend. But then it was going into my junior season, which I redshirted. That's when I started to ball out. And that's when the whole state started to recognize me. And that's when all the states started to recognize me. And that's kind of where my alter ego, who they used to call J. Lou 82, that's when he came out. And that guy was trouble. Because, you know, it was score touchdowns, let's go to the club. Score touchdowns, let's go to the club. That kind of lifestyle. Just really, I was just living life, just having fun. But I was bringing a lot of extra attention to the coaching staff, to the organization. I had really nice things at the time. The next woman that I was dating in college had a really nice Hummer and BMW, and I used to get really nice clothes. So people thought I was getting paid by boosters and investigations, and it was just a lot of red flags.
Wow.
And then the final red flag was going into my senior season. I was ranked as, going into my junior season, I was projected as a second round draft pick, which is amazing. And in my head, it's just like little tuba boy who had really no hopes and dreams and just wanted to be popular. To now I'm being told that you can go second round in the NFL draft. And it's just like, what? And it just happened so fast, right? And I'll never forget my head coach, Coach Cutter. He brought me in the office and he said, hey, look, listen, because I was ready to go. I was like, I'm out of here. That's all I need to hear. You know, like the money, I want to take family. This is the next level. Let's go. Like, who knows? I could get hurt this season. I don't want to risk it. Second round is perfect. And that same year was the year that I really got introduced to partying. So it was kind of all lining up for destruction. Could have been good, but it comes down to making the right choices. And my coach said, you know, why don't you stick around? We'll move you to wide receiver. We'll get a little bit of weight off you. We'll kind of make your stats jump so we can get you from second round to first round. And my parents were like, just do it. They're like, just stay in school. This is your only time. And so obviously I listened to my parents. And then the week before our first game, I went out to a strip club with my buddies and had been drinking and got pulled over. And that was the beginning of the spiral career-wise. You're still in college, so we weren't partying all the time. It was just like when you could get it in. And that was just the wrong time to get it in. And I actually got off. I shouldn't have got off. But when I was pulled over, the cop recognized me. And he directly confronted me. He said, you know, what are you doing out this late, Jamal? Like, you got a game in a week? What are you doing? And I told him, I was like, you know, I was just out having fun with the fellas. Have you been drinking? And I was like, yeah, a couple beers. And he was like, well, here's what we can do. This is crazy. I don't know the cop's name, thank God, so I don't get in trouble. But he was like, if you give me an autograph on this ticket, he was like, I'll let you go. And I couldn't believe that he said that to me. And it was I was almost too prideful at the time because I just couldn't believe that I was like, you're going to let me slide if I give you an autograph? Like, who says that? I did it. And so they took me down to the station and booked me. And then they only kept me for like an hour, though. They kicked me right out. But then the next morning, we had a booster meeting. So we had our big hoorah kickoff ASU, huge gathering of all the boosters and all the players and the team captains. And you get up there and give your speech. ASU is going to be this. Oh, this is, you know, all-star wide receiver. And I showed up and gave my little speech. And then I had a sit down with one of the main reporters. Her name was Jody Jaganowski. And we sat down at the little press conference, and it's me and Coach Cutter. And she stands up and she's like, Coach Cutter, how do you feel about your all-star wide receiver going into the season, getting pulled over, going 120 down the speedway last night under the influence? And I was like,
oops.
And I looked at him and he was just like, my office now. And so then that the outcome of that was they didn't know what happened. And they had always just preached, you know, if something happens, you got to let us know first before the media or anybody gets a hold of it, because you're under such a microscope. And the next morning, it's all over the news. It's everywhere, literally everywhere. My face was plastered all over campus. Jamal Lewis gets pulled. And so that right there was just like red flag. And my draft status went away in one, like literally one decision. And my coach had no choice but to suspend me indefinitely because they didn't have any details. So he was like, we don't know what you did. We don't know. Yeah. So you're suspended. And I was trying to tell him, I was like, you know, it's not that serious. And you're a kid. You're trying to fluff it, right? Instead of just taking ownership and being like, man, I messed up like bad.
Wow.
And so they ended up going and reviewing everything. I didn't get a DUI or anything like that. So I just got suspended for the first two games. And then the cool thing about the whole situation was, is my first game back was at Colorado, against Colorado. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to go nuts. Like, I'm going to show everybody that this was a mistake. So, you know, from there, it was just an uphill climb to try and get out of that. And unfortunately, that one mistake just kind of sabotaged everything. Yeah. Because your life is your application when getting into the league.
So how do we get from Jamal, the football player in Cleveland, to Jamal, this guy who's going to be a model and an actor and a whatever. And how do we get there?
Man.
And is it a good thing?
it's absolutely amazing, but it was a lot of pain. It was through the pain of that decision. And after I got released, because I went to the Redskins first and the Browns. Then I got released from the Browns, and I played a little bit of arena football, but it just wasn't the same. So I ended up coming home, which home was Scottsdale, Arizona, which is the place that I should not have been. And I had a little bit of chunk change from my experiences and no responsibilities. So I decided that I was going to just basically drown out the pain,
right?
Put on a mask and drink. And then I started popping pills. I got real heavy into pills. And pretty much if it was at the party, I was doing it. But the thing was, is like with my habit, it wasn't so much of a seek it. It was just always where I was. So it was very easy just to drown out my pain by masking it with not being sober. And that went on about for 2 years, 2 years straight when I look back at it. And it just is a complete blur. It was just partying day, partying night, partying day, just no responsibilities, no nothing. And what I was sharing with you is the way that I came out with the way that I came out of it is I was on a bender and I had been going for 4 days hard. I still have, someone still has pictures of that night, and they sent it to me a couple months ago. I almost threw up, like the way that I looked, because it was just like, I can remember the feeling.
Yeah.
And we went back to one of our buddies' house who supplied most of the stuff, like when we were partying like that. And man, he took one look at us with another one.
I love this piece of the story. It's really amazing.
And to go in a little deeper about it, this was even the crazy part. I didn't tell you this part. So his apartment was basically, I don't know if you know what a trap house is, but a trap house is, you know, it's basically like a drug dealer's house, and they just have the most random stuff everywhere. It's very dark. The windows are dark, blacked out, but there'll be like a scooter in the corner, like five PlayStations here, a pair of Jordans, like just stuff in boxes. Cause people, if they don't have money, they'll pay for stuff with, you know, there'll be five Rolex a stack. Random stuff. Like, no, who lives here? And when we first had left, because we started that 4 day bender, started out at his house. We were pre-partying. And when I came back and we knocked on the door, he opened the door and it's blinding white in there. Like the floors had been scrubbed clean. There were stains all over the floor. The floors looked brand new. It looked like a model house. And I was like, am I like this? Like I'm this high that I'm seeing this. That's what it was. You know, I'm looking around like, what in the world happened? And he had cleaned the entire place. And when we said, hey, we need some more, like we're going to keep going. And he cut me off. He was like, no, man. He was like, absolutely not. He was like, you're going to kill yourself. You're going to die. And then he told me, he was like, I found God, man. And he was like, even if you wanted it, I can't give it to you because I threw it all away. I dumped it down the toilet. And we were like, you wouldn't. Like, that's how you pay your rent. That's how you take care of yourself. Like, we've known you forever. There's no way you. And he's like, I promise, man. And then he just looked me dead in my eye. And he locked in with me. And it was just like, I was like, when you're on a bender and you have that much substance in your body, it's like your eyes are bouncing. Like, you can't even, it's, everything is just like, it's just off. And he locked in on my eyes and he was just like, Jamal, man, he was like, you're blessed. And he was like, stay that way. Every time I say, it gives me chills.
What was he saying? He's like, you mean, was it Jamal? You're a gifted person.
Yeah.
You've got all these blessings in your life, and you need to stay that way because you're destroying it. Is that what he meant?
I think God was using him to directly tell me that I had a purpose, and that's kind of how I perceived it. So it was
you felt it.
Yeah, I still feel it. I get tingles every time full body tingle right now every time. But yeah, he was just like, you're blessed. Stay that way. Me in that moment, yeah, like I told you, it was just kind of like right when he said, like right when it registered, like when stay blessed registered, it was like everything was still. And it was like this weight had been lifted off my shoulders. And it was like, I felt purpose. I didn't know what it was, but I just felt something I didn't feel. I almost want to say for a long time. I just never felt that. And then to wrap your head around the concept that it sobered me up from 4 days partying instantly. It was like such a divine feeling. There's no other way to describe it. It was just like, okay, I'm going home. This is over. I'll see you when I see you. But yeah. And so then from there, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I needed responsibility in my life. I'm like, that's the primary purpose why I'm getting to all this trouble is because I have no responsibilities. I have nothing to fill my schedule time. So I got on Craigslist and I just started looking for 9-to-5 jobs. And they had a part-time job at a solar company, which was working in a call center only for 4 hours a day. And I was like, well, let's just start there and see how that goes. Then now I have responsibilities every day. And if somebody's like, hey, you want to go party? I can say no, because I got a job. Right. So I did that. And I worked literally it was less than minimum wage. It was like $7.50 or something an hour. Maybe $8.50 at the time.
And it worked. In other words, even that minimal responsibility, you weren't tempted. Well, I don't know if you were tempted, but it didn't, you were able to stop doing whatever you were doing, drinking and pills and whatever.
Yeah. So I think the cool thing about it is I've always been good with structure because of my father. Like way I know, right. Like I have something that I know I need to be at for whatever, because it's, I understand the importance of, I guess, identifying addiction, and there's different kind of addictions, but for me, like I can turn it on and off. It's not like a thing where I wake up in the morning, I have to have a drink. So it's just like, if I'm not around it or if I have responsibilities, I don't like crave it. Right. So
are you a person with enormous willpower?
I think,
were you always like, if you decided
it's done. Yeah. The thing was, is when it comes to substance abuse, I only have one speed. Like I can't go to an outing and have one beer and just be like, okay, I'm going home. It's like green light. Let's go. But,
there's structure suddenly.
Yeah.
And then somehow you made it to Hollywood and yada, yada.
Yeah. So I think the structure of that eventually helped me come out of it, because just like you said, I still would have the weekends open. So I would still have fun on the weekends, but I would have that responsibility.
Got it.
Then the owner came to me because I was crushing it, setting appointments, and he offered me a manager position. And so within three months, I was the manager of his solar company. So now it went from 5 days a week to every single day. Now I'm the manager. Now there's more responsibility. Now I'm like, okay, there's no room for error at all anymore, which was perfect for me.
Right.
And then my fiance hates when I say this, but it's how it happened. It's my story. But the girl who I was, she's like, why don't you just say it's your friend? But the it's
okay. So your friend came to you and said,
sorry, babe. I'm sorry. This is what it is. I'm sorry. My friend. Okay. So my friend at the time was like, you know, you should model an act. And I was horse laughing. I've never laughed so hard in my life because the way that I perceived modeling was very feminine and baby oil, Speedo, that whole nine. And I was just like, no, like I put on helmets and I knock heads. I'm not putting on baby oil and a Speedo. It doesn't work that way. And my friend actually got me an audition and was like, just go, just try it and see what happens. I went down there and I auditioned and they called me a week later and they're like, hey, you booked it.
You got the gig.
I was like, what? Are you serious? And I was like, okay, that's cool. So I literally showed up. It was for a national commercial.
Bring your Speedo.
pretty much. It wasn't a Speedo, it was swim trunks, but the baby oil was there. Right. But I showed up to a casino down in Tucson, Arizona called Casino del Sol, and they were doing their first national campaign. They shot a national commercial. And I literally stood at the pool all day with baby oil on and a platter tray of fruit and was serving women and the whole, like, literally getting paid. And I'm like, this has got to be illegal somewhere. Like, this isn't
really? This can't be okay.
Yeah. And so I didn't know the rate. I didn't know anything. I just knew that they told me to be here. I knew nothing about the industry. This is my first ever anything. And so then about 2 weeks later, my day rate showed up in the mail, which was a $3,000 check. And I was like, I felt like $3,000 for that. But then on top of that, it was a national commercial. So then you get residuals for 18 months on it. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to look a little bit further into this.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started submitting onto things like Model Mayhem, just in Arizona, it was little stuff. Some stuff was paid, some stuff was like $50. Some stuff was trade for pictures. And then it just got to a point where I was booking so much stuff out there. And then I had just booked LA Fashion Week out in LA. Somebody had saw me on Facebook and was like, I'd like for you to walk for me in LA Fashion Week. And I was just like, all right. Because runway is even another, like runway me wasn't modeling. Like that's something completely even more different, which that's like beyond the baby oil and Speedo to me. And then it just got to the point where I was just like, okay, I'm booking a lot out here. Like I'm just going to move to LA. And I packed up and I moved to Marina Del Rey. It was beautiful. Oh, I loved it. Yep. Yeah.
I don't even want to just go through that. And like, you got to tell a story about when did the clothing line come in? And, you know, why is that? Or is it? It sounds like it's important in your life because it's more than a brand.
Yeah.
So it's a message.
Yeah. It's a message. It is my purpose. That's the only way. And the crazy thing is, I don't say like, oh, I made the term Stay Blessed. I'm sure people were saying it way before it impacted my life the way that it impacted it.
Yeah.
It literally saved me. So back when I was doing the solar thing, I got really into, because I've always worked out, but I got super into fitness, like really keeping up with my body and just tweaking it so I can just look healthy. And, you know, the football mentality with the workouts. And this is back when Instagram had just started. And I think I had like 50, I call them believers, not followers, but I had like 50 believers. And, you know, I would post a picture and I would get like 10 likes and like one comment. I'd be like, yeah. And so one day I just decided I went out to a little kiosk in one of the Arizona malls. And I just had a shirt made that literally it looked just like this without these things, just very plain. There's nothing to it. It just said, Stay Blessed. And I got done doing a workout and I just posted a picture. I was doing like a little flex and posted a picture and literally my Instagram, it blew up. Like I had more than 50 comments and more than 50 likes, which I was just like, and it was all people saying, where do I buy that shirt? I need that. That shirt is just everything. And I was just kind of like, what is this? Like,
oh, well.
And then I just prayed on it. And I heard my father say, hey, create me a vehicle to spread my message.
Yeah.
And so I actually went to Arizona State for digital art. So I sat down, I designed the logo, like I designed it myself.
No kidding.
And I just ran with it. I took all the money that I had and I went and got it trademarked. So I actually own the term. And then I put all the money I had. I didn't even have a website. I had no intention or like just of how to sell. Just never started a business. This is all new. And so I just bought up all this inventory And I literally just started giving the gyms that I was going to, I just started giving it to people. And if someone hit me, I would just be like, yeah, send me your address, I'll send it to you. And then more people just started asking to buy it. So I would just, I'd send them a PayPal link and I'd just be like, hey, just shoot me $20. I got you. It's all good. So it started just real unhinged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Compared to where it's at today. So, and there's been a lot of trial and error and mistakes and all kinds.
I will say that the thing that, and I don't know how you feel about this. We didn't speak about this at all, but the thing that I loved about it when I saw it and when I been thinking about it is so for you, it's clear, you know, it is rooted in your belief in God, but there's a way in which, you know, people are blessed with, they don't need a belief in God to be able to recognize and be grateful for all of the, you know, call it luck, call it like happenstance, people get born with all sorts of different, life could be so much more difficult for everybody.
That part.
You know, all sorts of different ways. But it's not, yeah. Right? It is what it is. I mean, and that's not because of anything necessarily you've done. You got born with the brain cells that allow you to X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
You bumped into the right person at the right time and learned something that changed your life. So there's a way in which although it can easily be linked to a deity.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be. And it's still true. You know, you should stay blessed, stay recognizing that whatever your situation, there's a blessing, right?
Yeah. Oh, you just gave me goosebumps. Yeah. So, and when I think that's
powerful. It's really powerful for me. Really powerful.
I love it. And I already thanked you off, but I do want to thank you because it means the world to me. And it says so much about your character that you made a purchase.
Oh.
And it's just, for me, it's not about the sale. It's about now you're helping spread the message, which that allows me to live in my purpose. That's it. It's very simple with what I'm doing, but it's so fulfilling. Like, it feels so good. And when you wear it, you'll see like the clothing line. I genuinely believe it's anointed because of the most random people who, like, I'm 6'5" and I'm tatted up. I have tattoos everywhere and muscle guy. And if I wear a cutoff walking down the street, I wouldn't say I'm like intimidating because I don't carry myself like that, but I'm not the one that people would run up and be like, hey, how you doing?
Let's pick on that guy. Yeah.
But when I wear this stuff, I just always get random people, you know, older people, younger people. Yeah. They'll walk up and just say thank you, or they'll say, hey, stay blessed. And at first I didn't understand it. Like, people would just walk up and start conversations. I've had people walk up and ask, can I pray for them, just randomly? And we're all walking billboards, and it's however you want to brand yourself. And for me, this is just the most fulfilling thing.
Okay. So here's this puzzle. So you were walking through the world, things were going great. You took a wrong turn.
Super wrong. U-turn.
Super wrong. You're circling a drain here in ways, right? You're like you're circling the drain. And now you are, your life is going really well. You've got a fiance, you've got this business, you're booking movies, you're still modeling, I don't know, whatever. You're doing this thing, but it's a world, that world that you're living in now, the world of acting, et cetera, it's filled with rejection. And I mean, maybe not. Maybe you are so blessed that everything is yes, 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 we want you. But it's like, you know, I mean, the people that I know, it's feast and then it's famine. Right. It's like you get booked for a thing, you get booked for a commercial, a movie, whatever. And it just seems like life is gone. And then it just drops off the cliff and there's nothing.
Yeah.
And it might be the last time you ever get a movie.
Yeah.
Do you not go back to that place where you're circling the drain?
That is such an amazing question. Thank you. Thank you for asking that, because that allows to further give my testimony of why stay blessed is more important than what I'm actually doing. And when I started modeling and acting, I was having a moral fiber fight with myself, because I'm promoting Stay Blessed, but I'm in Big Sean music videos, and I'm in Lizzo music videos, and I'm working with all these celebrities who the industry is very dark, and the message that they're spreading is completely opposite than what I stand for. And that's not judgment from me. It's just saying, like, you can't say stay blessed and then be in a song where there's literally saying, I don't F with you. Like, and it's just kind of like, what? Like, that's like, I don't know. So I got to a point where I was so uncomfortable, and I was just like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Am I supposed to just leave the modeling and acting world behind? Like, was this me just wanting attention because I used to get attention from football? Yeah. Being in that kind of limelight, or do I just leave that and just do Stay Blessed? Or, like, what do I do? Like, why did this opportunity just present itself, and it was so easy and so natural, and I like it. I find it fun. And then at the same time, the parallel of it's literally happened at the same time, Stay Blessed in the career in modeling and acting.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, I'd pray on it, and it came to me one day, and I heard God just tell me, he said, I need you to light up the darkness. And it was kind of like this vision of how a pastor goes in to preach to his congregation or his church. Everybody's there seeking. They're seeking because they need help. They want to become a better person, but they've made that choice to go there themselves. Like, they had a choice. Whereas a lot of these kids, younger kids, older kids, casting directors, whoever's on that set, it's a very, very dark atmosphere. It's a lot of demonic symbolism that's being put out into this world. It's a lot of evil people on set that will use the power that they have to manipulate girls or guys to do weird stuff. And that's what he showed me. He was like, you're one of my warriors, and I need you to go into the devil's house, and I need you to shine your light, which is a hard task, and people will rip you apart. And it did happen at first, because I would be preaching Stay Blessed on the internet, and then I would post a music video that I was in, and it's just like, what is this? And it's just kind of like what people are seeing, the perception of being in the industry is so surface to what I'm actually doing. Happens in my purposes behind the scenes when I'm on these sets and I'm wearing Stay Blessed, and a young kid walks up to me. You can just tell he's completely, like, going through something, or just he doesn't know what to believe or who to believe in. And to see somebody who does believe and who knows and is on that type of set saying, hey, listen, the devil comes into our house every single day. We can go into his and feel comfortable knowing that we are doing the right thing and staying with. And so that's all it is. It's just everybody has their different battles and their different journeys. And I just, that was the first time it became clear to me. And I was just kind of like, oh, okay. I need to put my armor on. So I keep my armor on and go to war.
Do you lose gigs because of it?
I'm sure I do. None that somebody has rightfully outspoken said, no, yeah, because of your faith, no.
You're too good.
Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff that I've turned down. There's I can't count that high how many gigs I've turned down. Oh, and that's what I was going to tell you about the rejection thing, too, is when I first came out here, because anybody in this industry, it's obviously like, you know, my mom thinks I'm handsome, so my mom says that I'm handsome. So my mindset when I came out here was like, I'm going to book everything, and it was just like, No. And I was doing self-submissions. And so, like, I did the math on it after a period of time. But I would do, like, 250 self-submissions a day, right? Which is over 1,000 self-submissions a week, and then, like, over 4,000 a month. And out of that, I would get roughly, like, 30 auditions. And then I would actually only book, like, 10, right? But if you're booking 10 gigs a month, that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, so it's just a number game. So once I took that rejection part out of it. Like I was thinking like you're not good enough. It's no, it's just they're very strategic. Like sometimes they want like an actual like fat, normal looking guy, which it's okay. There's something for everybody. In this one, maybe yeah. I look too old. Maybe I look too young.
Right.
And it's nothing personal. It's just you didn't fit the mold.
Right.
You fit the pool of maybe this could possibly work out, but right. not that mold. So like right. I used to tell people when they would ask me, I would just be like, I just look at it as you have to stack your nose to get that yes. The more nose you get, you're the closer to that yes.
Yeah. That's and, a good attitude.
Yeah. And so just keep going. I would submit to everything, like literally everything. You would say like, oh, we need a
short, fat tuba player. Submit. I can do that.
Yeah. Submit. Yeah. Literally just submit to everything. But another cool thing that I like what you said, you know, about the industry and the workflow of it is you're absolutely right. Like I just got done doing a Nike commercial with CeeDee Lamb, Kyler Murray, which it's a huge commercial. And it's like you get that natural just like high of being on. For me, like I'm back on the field. I'm back on set doing what I love at this age. I'm 41 now. But I'm still on the field. So I'm just like, wow, like look at God. Like this is crazy. It still ended up okay. But then after that, it's just like there's nothing for like
right. Right.
I'm filming here on Thursday. So there's something coming up, but it's a stretch. And so that's what I love. You know, having the clothing line and having these other outlets of sponsorships yeah. and the gym is I stay in the gym. My fiance will tell you it drives her crazy because I won't even let her work out with me or come with me. And she's just like, why can't I'm like, that's my therapy time. That's me time. I put yeah, my yeah. music on, world off, and it's just go time. Yeah.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I am looking at the clock here and that is just like, wow. So there's probably going to be a second one of these down the road. Sure,
you can let me know if you would,
but
I would love to take you out to dinner too, brother.
Yeah. Sure. Well, when I come to LA, and I do periodically.
Dinner's on me. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. But if we stopped right this second, 10 minutes from now, you'd be going like this. What? Oh man, I wish I would have said, what is that? What do you want to leave folks with?
Well, one's a promo, but no, I think more than anything, just no matter what you're going through in life, just as long as you believe in yourself first, it starts with believing in yourself. For me, it's believing in God, right? But I don't like to force that down anybody's, you know, belief system. But believe in yourself, have faith in God, and just know that everything that's happening in your life is for a reason, whether it's good or whether it's bad. And you can recreate yourself as many times as you want to. And it's possible. And it just comes with a mindset that is so consistent and so locked in on your goal that you won't stop until you get there. And I'm nowhere even close to my goal, the bar that I've set. We're en route. We're going straight at it. But yeah, I have. We just got done working on, this is my second feature film that I just shot where I'm the actual lead, like the main character, really? Main character energy. And it's a Christmas movie. And I want to give a huge shout out too, real quick, to Jamar Hill. He's the writer and director of it because they had already started working on it in another space and he kind of decided to redo it. And he cast me as the lead. And I said, look, man, I don't know if I can do it because like this is a love story. And you know, you got to kiss and portray love. And I was like, I won't cross that line because I have a fiance. And he thought about it for a day or two. And then he got back to me and he said, we'll cut out the kissing scenes. Let's go. And I said, man, let's do it. And we shot it, knocked it out. And the full trailer's not out yet, but the little snippet's out. But yeah, it's supposed to drop by Christmas. So I'm excited.
What's the title? What's
it's called First Christmas Home. First Christmas Home. Yeah, it's about a young man named Malcolm who went to jail for something he didn't do.
Yeah.
He gets out and falls in love with a cop. So it's pretty interesting. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, Jamal Lewis.
Yes,
what
sir.
A pleasure. What a treat. Both now spending an hour with you and putting a face to it.
There's no way that was an hour.
Unbelievable.
An hour.
I know. It's just wild. So, yeah. So thank
you. You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryant here on LA Talk Radio.